Will too many exemptions take the bite out of efforts to overhaul global corporation tax? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Officials from 130 nations have given their stamp of approval to a proposal to hike global corporate tax rates to at least 15%. The plan aims to ensure companies pay their fair share in nations where they operate. And according to the OECD, which led the talks, the changes could generate about $150 billion in annual tax revenues. That's money that governments say will help economic pandemic recovery efforts. But to get some countries, including China and India, on board with the plan, an exemption for manufacturing now features in the deal. The BBC's Andrew Walker explains whether that waters down the overall efficacy of the agreement.
This was certainly very important for some countries, China, India, some countries in Eastern Europe. They wanted to ensure that they were still able to attract inward investment by ensuring that there was some sort of tax relief on physical investment, although that will have some impact on the amount of tax that this agreement ultimately raises. It's not the main problem that the negotiators were trying to address. This kind of arrangement whereby you are actually trying to encourage foreign companies to build new factories really is not the problem. It was more about the way in which some international companies can allocate their accounts in such a way that they don't pay taxes that most people would say they should.
Could it lead other countries like Ireland, for example, where a lot of companies have their headquarters in an effort to avoid paying high taxes elsewhere? I mean, could it lead those countries to say, well, you've made an exception for places like China and India on manufacturing, can you make an exception for us too?
Well, Ireland, for example, is not actually party to this agreement, so if that remains the case, they'll be free to do whatever they like. But having said that, the agreement does have a mechanism that's intended to address the potential problem of countries not taking part and imposing a lower rate of corporation tax. They would love Ireland to be included. And I think the way in which that might happen is if Ireland accepts that it's going to have to do things a little differently. Ultimately, I think it will involve Ireland going to that 15% minimum.
The BBC's Andrew Walker. Thanks for your time this morning.
My pleasure, Victoria.
Checking the numbers now, global stock benchmarks are a little changed this morning. That's ahead of the U.S. jobs report due later today. Meanwhile, Bloomberg's analysis of Chicago Board Options Exchange data today shows London has recaptured its crown as Europe's share trading hub. That's a status Amsterdam took earlier this year after Britain's transition from the European Union was completed. Well, staying on Brexit, this week JP Morgan boss Jamie Dimon was in Paris cutting the ribbon on the U.S. bank's new European hub. French President Emmanuel Macron was on hand to welcome the move. He's been courting financial firms to shift to Paris in an effort to transform the city into Europe's post-Brexit financial center. Though JP Morgan will retain a substantial presence in London, 800 staff members are expected to be based in Paris by the end of next year. It's a move many other financial firms are making, too. About 7,500 jobs have shifted away from London since its European Union divorce. To stem that slow trickle and in a move to bolster the British capital's dominance in the industry, the UK government this week unveiled a plan to sharpen the sector's competitive advantage in a post-Brexit world. Part of the way forward involves closer ties with Asia and the US. Nicola Watkinson is Managing Director of International Trade and Investment at the Citi UK, which represents Britain's financial services industry. She explains what a successful post-Brexit strategy could look like.
The reality is that the UK recognises that 95% odd of global economic growth going forward is going to be outside of the EU. Markets like the US and growing markets across Asia represent an extraordinarily important opportunity for the UK to grow its global position. The US, of course, is extraordinarily important to the UK, whether that be around areas such as technology and innovation, but increasingly around areas like green finance as well, particularly under the Biden administration, as we really see a strong push towards net zero.
Does it look like those are things the UK is already focusing on with Asia and the US?
Absolutely, whether it be with India, or with Japan and Singapore, with Canada, with the US and other markets. If the UK and the US join forces, because we have the two largest global financial centres in the world, if we work together for global standards, whether it be around green finance or around technology, we can actually pull in many other markets behind us.
And how quickly do you think some of these new partnerships could come to fruition?
I think some of this can happen quite quickly in the lead up to big events like the COP26 in November. You can see the US and the UK really pushing forward with a shared agenda around a lot of these areas. In terms of other free trade agreements, you've seen a huge impetus behind the UK's efforts to forge new trade agreements with the US neighbours of Canada and Mexico, but is also obviously talking to Australia, to New Zealand, and to a range of other markets, and really pushing forward on exciting new areas of free trade agreements, such as digital provisions, which are increasingly important, especially when you think that the UK's economy is about 80% services.
So could these partnerships with North America, with Asia, make up for losses that the UK could see without permanent equivalence with Europe?
I think it's not necessarily an either or, but future growth for the UK will focus a lot into the Indo-Pacific area, as well as with the US, Japan, Singapore, and other like-minded countries. But the UK will also work very hard to preserve and build its relationships with the EU and seek to continue to partner together wherever that can be possible.
Nicola Watkinson from the City UK, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Well, if you missed any of our coverage this week, which takes a deep dive into financial services post-Brexit, you can head over to marketplace.org and click on the London Unbound tab at the top. There you'll find in-depth interviews with the boss of pan-European exchange operator Euronext, one of the bosses at the London Stock Exchange, and a host of others. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.